Mr. Webb, reel 5.
Yes, well, as I say, we went down from... we thought that we were going to entrain at Le Havre to go by train to Rouen. But for some unknown reason, I don't know why, there was a bit of fog about, and although that didn't stop us from going, the boat took on and went down to through the River Seine to Rouen, which was a very memorable journey to me. I mean, I just watched the scenery as I went along, and as we went under the bridges over the Seine.
Now, the next point I want to start talking to you about is you were posted to Carnoy to join the 6th Battalion of the Dorset Regiment in December of 1916. And this would have been your first acquaintance with the trenches and the battlefields.
Yes.
What was Carnoy like? Could you describe it for me and what sort of impression it made
on
you?
Well, Carnoy was absolutely a scene of devastation. I mean to say, it was mud, shells galore. You couldn't tread very far, and all the roads were shell-pocked, and Labour battalions were cleaning up all the mud and trying to make it presentable for the military, for the people who went up the line, you see, would have to use those old roads, which, of course, it wasn't more of a road than more like a puddle of mud all the time. You see, it was full of mud. But Carnoy itself was a very desolate, very uninteresting area, because, you see, it was really in the area where they'd held that Somme battle of July. All around Elba Wood and Trones Wood and all those areas.
Did your first view of the of a sort of battle theatre surprise you in any way? Was it what you expected, or were there any things you hadn't expected?
No, it didn't surprise me, because I did realise from what I'd seen other people, you know, whether I've come in contact with that came back from the front. Before I joined up, I'm talking of now.
So it was all just how you expected it?
They just simply said, oh, well, it's hell on earth, and you've got to make the best of a bad job, and whatever happens, you can't get away from it.
So it was all it was just as you'd expected?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I didn't think there was anything different to what I thought, saw.
Now, the 6th Battalion, which you were joining, had just come out of the Somme battle a short while earlier. I wonder, when you met up with these people, what your impressions were like about the condition they were in, both physically and morale.
Well, I wouldn't say. I think they were rather tired. I think they were rather demoralised, because they'd had rather a tussle, and they'd lost an enormous lot of casualties. I mean to say, the battalion, you see, that's why we were reinforcing, you see, it was because they had to make the... they only came out more or less to reinforce. And to probably, try and get a shave and a wash.
When you joined up with them, were they inclined to talk about their experiences very much?
Well, they wouldn't say a lot, but they just said, of course, one or two of them I knew from my own hometown. And, they said, what are you doing out here? I said, well, I suppose I'm doing the same as you are. And what they did then, they just simply didn't say a lot about what had happened, but they just said what a hell of a time they'd had.
Now, Carnoy was, strictly speaking, a rest area. I'd like you to concentrate your attention on what it was like there and start off by describing for me what sort of accommodation you had.
Well, I should say that...
Carnoy, yes.
Well, Carnoy to me was, as I say, a very desolate place. It looked as it was, all stumps and... you know, where they've blown the trees to pieces and just been made absolutely shell-pocked everywhere. And when I went in there, of course, I saw these fellows that I knew very well, and they didn't think that... of course, I was a novice. I didn't know much about it, and I had that to find out. But they were quite all right other than that. But so I asked them, I said, well, what was it like up there? You see, because I could hear the shell fire, I could hear the guns. And they said, oh, well, they said, you won't know fast enough when you get up there, you see. Well, then from there, the accommodation was where the army'd put down few of these Nissen huts. The Nissen huts were a round congregation. I expect you've seen some of the old relics about.
Yes.
And, well, you may be 40 or 50 in one of these places, just laying down on the rough floors. They did have a few wooden floors where they used to put them in sections.
Yes.
And you stayed there until such times they said, well, now look, you drew your rations, you had a shave, and copped it on the edge of a shallow, trying to shave off with cold water, a bit of soap or whatever you put it on.
Mm.
And then I always remember that, suddenly they write out the orders. You see, every day they used to have a mess corporal used to come in and read out the orders for the day. You see, they used to come in, listen to orders. Well, everybody had to listen. They said, tomorrow you'll be getting ready to go up the trenches. Tomorrow night. And they used to tell us what we had to do, and then we'd be given our equipment. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you that our equipment was issued to us at Rouen.
Okay.
Anyway, we had this... equipment, and it was all had to be put in this Nissen hut, you see. There were several of them, of course, because there was a good few of the battalion there, but they had suffered very heavy casualties.
Yes.
And anyway, from there, the day dawned that we had to go up. Well, then we used to go up at night, you see, dark.
Yes. Let's talk about this journey of going upwards. You were sent up to Le Transloy on the Somme.
That's right.
Right at the beginning of 1917.
Yes.
What do you remember of the details of the journey up to the lines, the kind of places you went through,
things
you saw?
I went through several places like Fleurs, a place called Fleurs, Lissage, Le Transloy, of course, was where we were going to be in the front line, Le Buffs.
Yes, well, these are the names of the places you went through.
Yes.
What did you see around you? This was your first experience of going up to the front line.
Nothing else but desolation. I mean, it was just absolutely blown beyond words, blown off the map. A matter of shallows and water. All the holes were full of water, and you just simply picked out... Well, you see, we were led in by what they call a runner. And he was a man that went up in daylight and looked over with an officer of your regiment to see... the line and take over what he was going to take over that night when we went in the trenches, you see. He'd have to know where the machine gun posts were, where the bombing posts were, and he'd go up and interview the officers of the battalion that was then holding the line, which we were going to relieve.
And he would take you up at night?
Yes, we were taken up at night. In the darkness, we just...
Was it difficult finding your way along the trenches?
Very difficult.
Why?
Because sometimes the runner himself, although he went up in daylight, the things that he used to set his position on, if you like to put it that way, would be... we did have, times innumerable, white tape on sticks stuck in, you see.
Stuck in where?
Into the mud.
On the bottom of the trench or the top?
No, trenches. No, going over the rough country to get into the trenches, because this is ground that had been recaptured.
I see.
And they used to stick in some proper, pieces of timber, square timber, little bit of square timber. And wherever that tape went to, would be leading you to your front line, the position you was wanting to go in. Well, then you see all these... B Company may go in, they say we're in B Company's front line. You'd be the first ones in. You simply chased down until you got... before you got there, probably the Germans had shelled the area pretty heavy and blowed the tapes all to blazes. You couldn't find any connection at all. The runner then was lost. He couldn't tell unless he had some form of building, wrecked building or something like that, you see. They used to be trained in all that sort of thing. For spotting any area that, that would lead them on to where they would know where they are.
Once you got off the open ground and into the first of the communication trenches, was your progress impeded at all?
Yes, more so than you were up on top of the ground before you got there, for the sole reason you, from Carnoy to the trenches, was the rough roads blown up and gravel roads, you see. I mean, there was more substance in that for walking on. When we went on up into the communication trenches, they were full of mud, mud and water. You'd be up to your knees. Probably. Well, they did use jackboots in the early stages, but the suction of the jackboots when the mud got stiffened, you know, dry, partially dry then I should say, pulled your jackboots off. So that's why they made us wear our ordinary military boots and puttees, because you had a better way of getting your feet out of the mud. See, with jackboots, you pull your jackboots, that's what the Germans found.
Yes, okay, good. Apart from the problem of getting through the communication trenches, which were filled with mud, did the communication trenches get very crowded?
Well, no. If you were coming in the trenches to take over, I should imagine that the battalion that was in there would send out another runner, as they called them, to connect our runner to lead them into the positions that they had to go. You see, the Germans may be shelling. Well, of course, that demoralized the troops. I mean, you had to seek cover from this way you could, and very often you had to stick it and go on and hope for the best. If you was knocked out, you was unlucky. But what I meant was, with the what happened was this. When you got to the from the communication trench onto the
reserve line,
that's right. Then we went through the reserve line to the support, from the support line to the front line, where there was the firing steps. And we used to go there, and the man in charge, like I would be, I'd have to go and say to the man, well, look, can you tell me, I said, what the area is here? And he used to say, well, yes. Now, look, over here's two machine guns. There's another one here is a trench mortar. Another place perhaps would be a bombing post. Now, he used to say, well, there'll be one of the watch points here, and so and so and so and so, and you may see a German or two in the morning when it's daylight. He used to give you all the lay of the land, how far the Germans was away from that particular post. We're in posts, you see, on the front line was a rugged job with a trench, with a, what do you call them?
Fire step.
Step up, parents.
Did you take over from the? You were going to relieve men who were already in the trenches. Would they stay on post until you arrived?
Oh yes.
Well, tell me how the changeover would.
Well,
would
the
be
changeover
organized.
Would be that when you got there, you were the man in charge. You would go and interview the man in charge on that particular point.
He as
would,
you've just explained.
Yes, and yes. He was waiting.
Okay.
He was waiting to receive you because he knew very well he was going to come out of the line, which was a great. Well, God sent to him, really. You see, to go back.
Yes, I see. Fine. Okay, good. Now, at Le Carnoy, the sector of the trench that you now moved into, what was it like? Describe it for
at
me.
At Carnoy?
At Carnoy.
Well, actually...
There you were in the trenches. What was around you? What was the sector you were in like?
Well, you see, at Carnoy... it was a sort of ground that had been gone over, if you understand me, when they had advanced, you see, in that July.
Yes, what was it like?
Well, as I say, blown all to blazes. It was just a matter of devastation all around you. It just, you see, it wasn't a matter of trenches there. There was some trenches, but then you see, you didn't use them. You used the roads if you was in that area, as well as you could.
And I'd like to start off just by considering the front line. And I'm interested to try and get you to describe for me what trench warfare was like and what trench conditions were like and what routine life was like. So I wonder if we could begin just by getting you to tell me, if you can, what would be... Imagine a typical day in the trenches. What would be the main... events
well,
during the course of it.
When you took over from the other people at night, in the morning, of course, the lay of the land always looked strange to you, and you'd have to post your sentries, And they would, the gun was put in position on the firing step, you know, where they could get behind and fire the gun, you see, on the tripod. And, well, these sentries used to watch and keep their eye on the enemy the best they could. Of course, as I say, one of the things they had to be careful was sniping, you see, because, I mean, the actual man that was on the fire step would have a box periscope, which could go up. In fact, I've given one away to the museum. They had bayonet periscopes. And on these little points of the bayonet, they used to push this thing on, and it was like a looking glass, you see. And it had a little shelf down you could pull down, so the glint of light wouldn't show on it, because the Germans could tell you it was a periscope. And they would fire and beat that periscope all to pieces, because they know jolly well that it was somebody looking into it. Mm. You see, you could be in the trench like this, and you could be all day long looking at that periscope, and you could see all the area around.
Yeah.